Majalila, chapter 22, the process of devotional service. Today we'll be doing a verse quoted in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. This chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita is spoken by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami. He's explaining devotional service to Sanatan Goswami.
Kamadinam katina kattida pallita dunideshas. Tesham jata maina karuna natrapa no prasanti. Utsrijaitana tayadu pate sampratam labdha buddhis. Tvam ayatasharanam abhayam mam nayung sat madasye.
Very good.
Kama adinam.
Of my masters, such as lust, anger, greed, illusion, and envy.
Kati,
how many?
Na,
not. Katita, in how many ways?
Palita,
obeyed.
Durnidesha,
undesirable orders.
Tesham,
of them.
Jata,
generated.
Mai,
unto me.
Nidesha,
excuse me.
Na,
not.
Karuna,
mercy.
Na,
not.
Trapa,
shame.
Na,
not.
Upashanti,
desire to cease.
Utsrijya,
giving up.
Etan,
all these.
Ata,
herewith.
Yadu pate,
O best of the Yadu dynasty.
Sampratam,
now. Labdha buddhi, having awakened intelligence.
Twam,
you.
Ayata,
approached.
Sharanam,
who are the shelter.
Abhayam,
fearless.
Mam,
me.
Nayungsva,
please engage.
Atmadasye,
in your personal service. O my Lord, there is no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Although I have rendered them so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. I have not been ashamed to serve them, nor have I even desired to give them up. O my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty, recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires. And I now come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Purport. This verse is also quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we are saying, Hare, O energy of the Lord, O my Lord Krishna. In this way, we are simply addressing the Lord and His spiritual potency, represented as Radha Krishna, Sitaram, or Lakshmi Narayan. The devotee always prays to the Lord and His internal energy, consort, so that he may engage in their transcendental loving service. when the conditioned soul attains his real spiritual energy and fully surrenders unto the Lord's lotus feet, he tries to engage in the Lord's service. This is the real constitutional position of the living entity. Repeat the translation, please. O my Lord, there is no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Although I have rendered them so much service, we can get into it more than that. Although I have rendered them so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. I have not been ashamed to serve them. Nor have I even desired to give them up. O my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty, recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires. And I now come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Right. Very beautiful prayer. Om Agyana Chimadandasya Agyanam Jana Shalakya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shivasri Go Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. At first, when you hear this verse begin, you may become fearful. Oh no, not one of those Bhagavatam verses smashing our unfortunate conditioned nature. Yes? You might feel that way. We know it's bad, but the world is a certain way, and our bodies and minds are a certain way. So we just have to kind of realize that, make the best use of a bad bargain by indulging in the desires while recognizing they are bad. There is some truth to that. In the Bhagavatam it is stated that if you have an attitude of distaste for the fulfillment of material desires, gradually you'll become fatigued of acting in such a way in which you know is distasteful. The point is that material nature is so powerful that even though something is distasteful to you, still you're forced to do it. That was Arjuna's question to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. How is it that living entities engage in lusty desires even against their own will? Arjuna is letting you know there's something sinister and powerful going on in the material cosmos. You're not just paying at home your electric bills, your water bills, your gas bills. You're also paying some other bills too. They are the hidden taskmasters of material existence. So, yes, it's true that by maintaining a distasteful attitude, gradually, after many births and deaths in different species, you'll start to think, if it's distasteful, why am I acting in this way? And then one will realize the power of material nature and understand that unless I take shelter of Krishna, there's no hope. Taking shelter of Krishna means taking shelter of devotional service. This main point, so often we forget. Devotee means devotional service. So as Krishna Bhaktas, we're always looking at our service to see where we're at. What is my offering of service? Not what is my mental belief in Krishna, How am I taking to the theology? No. How are my senses engaged in the service of the Lord? That is the make it or break it test. With my eyes, am I seeing the form of the Lord? With my ears, am I hearing the glories of the Lord? With my tongue, am I chanting the glories of the Lord? Tasting food offered to the Lord? With my nose, am I smelling flowers and incense offered to the Lord? How do you engage your whole body? The acharyas point out that, you know, when the pujari throws out the water after offering to the Lord, or in Guru Puja, Prabhupada's Guru Puja, that's a chance to engage your whole body in the service of the Lord. When you feel the water hit your whole body, you're actually engaging your whole body. So remember that the next time the pujari, just get into it. Yes! Because everyone likes some sparshudra bhoga, the pleasure, the enjoyment from skin sensation. So when the pujari throws out the water, the Vaishnava acharyas explain, this is a chance that you get into it with your samsparsha bhoga. You actually feel that water hit your body. And you... You can try this. Sometimes, if material desires assault your mind, because wandering around in this Kali Yuga, even specifically going about your devotional service, traveling in the city here and there, you're always seeing so many lusty billboards and adverts everywhere, lustily clad people. So your mind can become infected. So you can adopt this technique given by the Vaishnava acharyas. When that happens, when you feel your mind becoming affected, just feel in your mind that water from that's been offered to the deity hitting your body. And you'll feel relief because your sense of skin is being engaged. Your sense of touch. Feel that water hit you. Ah, yes. Try it. You'll see. It's not that we do all these things in Krishna consciousness just out of blind rituals. No, they are factual techniques for saving us from material existence. So, you can take advantage of that. These are mysteries about the sense of touch. When the water that's offered to the deity hits the skin, even just a few drops may hit you because you're wearing clothes. A few drops may have direct contact with the skin. Or you can make sure that when the pujari is really... Yes, get into it. You watch and see. Immediately your consciousness feels uplifted and cleansed because you are engaging your body in the service of the Lord. You can just think, my body is meant to feel that water thrown out on me. And as I said, even when you're not in the temple room, when you're other places, and your consciousness gets infected in your homes or on the street, or wherever, crossways, gopals, whatever, just in your mind, feel that water sprinkling over your body that's been offered to the deity, it's been offered to Prabhupada, and you'll notice what happens. Your body feels satisfied. It's a science. It's not just mental theology. You can try it. So, we want to see how our senses are engaged in Krishna's service. If our service is reducing, as you know, if our service attitude is becoming cynical, then we know there's a problem. This happened to me when I was a young devotee. Of course, not recently, but when I was a young devotee, and I remember 1975, I was coming from a very staunch temple, one of the most famous ISKCON temples in history, the New York temple of the 70s, you know, just full of staunchos and just Atmanavedanams, just 80 brahmacharis, 40 brahmacharinis, and about 50 householders, and everyone went to morning and evening program. Everyone was fully engaged in devotional service, and conditions were very austere, but everyone was so happy. Of course, They did various things back then, which we no longer do, and as we've grown up in Krishna consciousness, the temple president would keep the heat off during the day in the middle of a New York winter so that the devotees would realize you'll be warmer out on Sankirtan. Don't worry, that was 30 years ago. Nevertheless, everyone was happy. They were too busy to think of anything else. But then, in 75, I had to go to Los Angeles to work on the BBT. And that was like going from, how can we say it, from the ashrams in Melbourne to the Gold Coast. To Mwilumba. All of a sudden, you know, wow, the sun is always shining, fresh fruits everywhere, no winter. Everything was relaxed and laid back. Here we were coming in, staunchos from New York City, the struggle for existence. Maybe you haven't been to New York, you've been to London. New York is about thrice the pace of London. So, you know, there we were coming in, you know, from New York into Southern California. California dreaming. Yeah. and all the California devotees just, I'm over. All of them had like long hairs, you know. The name of the street the devotional community on is still there, same place, the big neighborhood. It's called WATSEKA. It's American Indian name or something. Watseka. But we used to always call it, you know, Watseka. Because none of the men ever had any Sikas. That was Watseka Avenue in Los Angeles. And then an hour down the road was another temple, still there now, in the seaside resort town of Laguna Beach, kind of like a Byron Bay type city. So that we call the Triguna Beach. And the only thing further out, once you felt Los Angeles was too tough, and you went to Triguna Beach, then the last stop was Hawaii. Then all your devotional assets were gone. So we arrived from New York, you know, staunch brahmacharis, brahmacharis, even the householders. They were like that, hit the California atmosphere, and like, wow, it was a major challenge for us. There was plenty of time for fault finding, plenty of time for criticizing. Suddenly, after like never hearing this, we were in the midst of hearing all the different faults from around the whole world. Because it was time for that. Did you know what just happened in Nigeria? Ooh. Did you hear what the temple president and outer whatever, remote part of South America did? Ooh. Did you hear this? Did you hear that? So we were constantly being bombarded with this. And I remember myself, I started to be affected. I started getting cynical. You gotta watch out, you know. Make sure if you're rendering service that actually everyone is completely perfect. Otherwise your service won't be fruitful. You gotta make sure everyone in the whole temple is just perfect. Otherwise, watch out. So I felt my devotional enthusiasm decreasing. I was becoming more and more cynical and sophisticated. Whereas, when I was in New York, I was just happy to do any service. Suddenly I was becoming a mature devotee. World-wise. And I wasn't just about to do any service. I wasn't about to just, you know, surrender. You know, without, you know, understanding the full situation and the devotional potencies of everyone within 100 square kilometers. If there was any fault anywhere on any of the continents, my service would be reduced because you just don't know. So after a while, I just began to feel, this is not the way I want to go. What's happening? You become like who you're associating with. If you want to be a strong devotee, you associate with strong devotees. If you don't want to be a strong devotee, you immediately find devotees who will help you be weak. Yeah, don't worry. I don't know why they make a big thing about being fully engaged. That's for some people, but it's not for everyone. It just gets a bit too much, And devotional service. You got to do devotional service. Are you engaged in devotional service, Prabhu? Just goes on and on and on. Give us a break, So, I could see that because this association was all around me, therefore my mind was becoming like that. And I could look ahead and see what's the natural conclusion of this kind of mentality going to be. I'm just going to be, drifting further and further out. My service enthusiasm and determination is going to go way down. So I said, I don't want to go this way. Finally, I got a grip on myself. It just was about a month. So nah. Meanwhile, I could see so many of my God brothers and God sisters from New York in the California atmosphere. Not simply California, but Southern California. It's like not simply Australia, but the Gold Coast, Murrumbah, surfer's paradise like that. I could just see they were just getting mowed down by the material energy. I said, oh. Instead of looking, where's the service? They were just gathering in clusters up and down Watsika Avenue, Did you hear about this? Prabhupada called it talk. Did you hear about the temple president? In that small town in France. Ooh. This became half of the day. And then, as soon as you would wake up in the morning, go to the morning program. Everyone went to the morning program, and no question. Back then, the battle, you see, in New York, the standard was morning and evening program. When we got to L.A., we were shocked to find out that devotees were fallen. They didn't go to the evening program, although they went to every morning program. They didn't go to the evening program. We said, wow, these guys are out of it. They don't show up in the evening. Morning program was jammed, 200 devotees. Evening program, only about 50. So we thought, this is abominable. After class, after everyone went to the morning program, you could see, right before breakfast, after breakfast, little clusters gathered up and down the street, What do you think? Did you hear the latest decision by the temple president? What's got into him? I don't know. He wants to send everybody out on Sankirtan. He wants to do this, or he wants to do that. Whatever it was, you find something. So, I began to think, I don't want to go this way. I want to go back to Godhead. I want to please Srila Prabhupada. So if it's going to take me kind of being aloof from all this kind of talk, then that's what I'll do. But the fact is, you become like who you associate with. So I thought, I have to change my association. Because some of my close associates, they were getting caught up in this. But then there were devotees who didn't want to be like that. So you become like who you're with. I remember one devotee, Prabhupada's first Indian disciple, Haridas, he came through L.A., and he was explaining how wherever Prabhupada went in India, because he was the first Indian devotee, he would drop his service and just go to see Prabhupada. He could be the head pujari in Ahmedabad, but if he heard Prabhupada had just come to Mumbai, he'd drop his service, jump on the train, go to Mumbai, run into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada, here I am. I just came to be with you. He would do this again and again, no matter where he was in India serving. He would just drop it as soon as he heard Prabhupada had arrived in India and just go see Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada was very fatherly for the first, especially for the first Indian devotees, because they were basically joining an all-Western movement. Finally, he did it to Prabhupada one time. Again, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was guarding Prabhupada's door as a secretary, but this devotee is very expert. He slipped past Maharaj and got into Prabhupada's room. Full dandavats, namo Vishnu. And got up and said, "Prabhupada, I just came to see you. I'm here." And Prabhupada just looked at him and said, "Do you think I am this body? If you want to be with me, you can go to any temple. Go before my Vyasa-san. Bow down. I'm there." So I heard him say that. So I thought, well, maybe this is the way to get out of my predicament, because I could feel this mentality overcoming me. I was becoming so shrewd, so sophisticated, so clever about, you know, being world-wise, ISKCON world events-wise. I was becoming so expert in that, but what was happening to my service? My service enthusiasm was way down. All day long I was just thinking, what's going on over here? What's going on over there? What's the latest decision coming from the TP? Who are the GBCs? So finally I said, okay, I'm gonna take advantage of Prabhupada's instruction. I went into the temple room and I bowed down before the Vyasa-san. "Prabhupada, please take this attitude away from me. I just want to be your humble servant." I did that every day for 3 days. In 3 days, mystically, it's gone. Attitude was gone. That was a powerful example for me of taking shelter of the spiritual master's instructions and doing what you have to do to guard your precious capacity for rendering devotional service. Without that devotional service, what is the use of us? Now this verse, as I said, potentially is frightening. When you hear the first lines, you may start to tremble. Uh-oh, here we go again. One of these lust-bashing verses. One of these material desire-extinguishing verses. Which are nice Vedic texts, but don't really apply to the situation today. They don't really deal with the psychology of people today. In which, you know, they just gotta do what they gotta do. They gotta get it out of their system, you know, and progress by, you know, doing these things, and then gradually when they become old, it just, you know, drops away. Now, first of all, this verse is not simply a so-called lust-bashing verse, although there's nothing wrong with those. It's offering association at Krishna's lotus feet. It's actually a very personal prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yadupati, Lord of the Yadu Dynasty. Oh, my Lord, O head of the Yadu Dynasty, kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. So you have two things going on in this verse. The realization of what material nature does and the personal attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. These are the two elements of devotional life. Understanding the truth of material existence, what it does to you, and understanding the shelter, tasting the shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. So you get both things. That's our program. Now, let's deal with each element of the verse. Kamarinam katina katita palita durni de stas. Very graphic, very accurate. Oh my Lord, there's no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Specifically in the Sanskrit it says, kati. How many? Katida, in how many ways? So you can take inventory of your life in this way. How many lusty desires? How many types of lusty desires? You see, this is the reality of the material world. When you walk around, when you act in this world, you should not simply feel the weather or feel the various mental influences. You should feel the masters. You should understand graphically what are the real masters of this world. You know what it's like to have a master if you've worked before. Yes? A lot of you have held jobs before? Yes. then you understand what it means to have a boss. Not like the Hare Krishna bosses, where you can say, my tummy's a little hurt today, I can't do my service. All right. My mind is troubling to me. I don't think I can report for my duties today. Okay, Prabhu, okay, try to come in tomorrow. Those are the Hare Krishna bosses. they can say, it's a voluntary movement, you know, and Prabhu, I just need some time in order to just sort myself out. Imagine, have you ever tried telling that to a work boss? Is that what you're aware of? How far you get? Won't get very far at all. I don't like your attitude. I mean, it's not so much what you tell me, it's just how you say it. You ever try saying that to your employer? No way. But in the world of the Hare Krishnas, you can do that. You know. So anyway, what is a real master like? You must. In employment, you must do what the employer says. Otherwise, you don't get paid, and you want the pay. So, there are more powerful masters. Lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. You've got to feel how those things are forcing you, pushing you. They attack your body, attack your mind. Do this, do this, do this. And it feels like there's no other way. I've got to submit. That's just the way it is. I've got to submit. Who else can fight this? Everyone's submitting. What do you think I am, a saint? That's the one thing I don't like about this Krishna consciousness. I mean, you know, I accept the philosophy, but the fact is, you know, not everyone's a saint. I'm just trying to do the best I can, you know. I know I'm not a pure devotee. I never said I was. No one ever thought I was. So what's the big deal if I'm submitting to the masters? I don't see any other way out until I get old and naturally I give it all up. But what does Rupa Goswami say here? There's no limit to the unwanted orders. It's not that, okay, I fulfill a few desires and that'll be it. No. No limit. And there's no limit to the types of desires that'll come to you. Now, what is the interesting psychological thing Rupa Goswami explains? I've rendered them so much service, but they've not shown any karuna, no mercy for me. Just like even an ordinary job, isn't it so? You work hard, you get some weeks a year vacation. Yes, everyone knows Christmas till middle of January, nothing goes on, everyone's on vacation. Do you think your material desires give you a vacation? Have you ever had that experience? Your material desires tell you, okay, you've done enough. We'll stop bothering you. Has that ever happened? You've served us so nicely. All right, that's enough for this lifetime. Or even, that's enough for the next year. Have you ever heard that? We won't bother you for another year because you've served us sufficiently. We'll give you a break. You've been a faithful servant. Okay, we'll back off. Has anyone ever had that happen? This is the nature of the taskmaster of material existence. And that's what Rupa Goswami is talking about here. Although I've rendered them so much service, they have not shown me any mercy. No respite, no vacations, no holidays. Just nonstop, more demands. You give in a little, and then more is wanted. Everyone hates that kind of employer, right? Even in Krishna consciousness, we get a little edgy if we think, hey, I've done so much service and they still want more, right? What do they want out of me? I've been in the ashram 2 whole years and they're still on my case. Right? 4 whole years, 5 years. See, as I've explained before, the time period shrinks as things go on. Back in the 70s, someone would say, you know, Dave, don't you know I've already done this for 10 years? I've been around since 66, rendering devotional service. What do you, you know, so if I need to slack off a bit, what's the problem? I've done 10 years' time. Then in the 80s, it went down to kind of like, you know, 8 years. I've been 8 whole years on Sankirtan. And in the 90s, it went down to 5 years. 5 whole years of surrendered service. What more do you want out of me? Now, in this decade, it's down to 2 years. 2 whole years of being roster fodder. Doing what the temple commander, temple president, what more, you know, what more do they want out of my human form of life? So, think about it. Service with no mercy. That is the way the material energy functions in terms of lust, anger, greed, envy. The more you serve, doesn't matter. You get no vacation. But we're looking for that. Yes, there'll be relief through the fulfillment of material desires. There'll be a period of peacefulness. Right? It's never happened. But this is the power of Maya. It's never happened, but you're looking for it. So what else here? This oppression is so brutal. But still, Rupa Goswami says, I've not been ashamed to serve these masters. No shame. I haven't even desired to give it up. Very woeful situation. Then he makes his personal plea. O my Lord, O Yadupati, head of the Yadu dynasty. It's like our Yadu Shrestha has just arrived. Krishna is Yadu Shrestha, the best of the Yadu dynasty. He's also Yadupati, lord of the Yadu dynasty. So Rupa Goswami is making a personal plea, showing you how to approach the Supreme Lord. Not that you get all frustrated and down on yourself and miserable. There's just no hope. I'm never going to conquer these desires. It doesn't make sense. I know I'm not happy, but still I do these things. Let me just find some devotees who understand where I'm at and listen to them. What do you think, Prabhu? It's not possible, is it? Nah, it's not possible. Just as I thought. You are a good friend. Thank you so much. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha. Sava Shastrikala. Just a moment's association and I understand now. It's not possible. Thank you, Prabhu, for this benediction. What more is not possible? Yeah, I agree too. This is much of our devotional program. It's really not meant for where devotees are really at. I mean, it's good for the Paramahansas, the saints, but most of us aren't like that. Yeah. I agree. Thanks, Prabhu. I'll call on you next time I need to really understand myself and Krishna consciousness. I can see you're really experienced. You know it's not possible to do devotional service. Or it just a little bit will do you. Thank you so much. Better we turn to Yadupati and rest our case there. Oh, my Lord, here's the situation. Here's how I am. So, what to do? I now come to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. I'm afraid. I think I'm not going to be able to complete Krishna consciousness. I don't think I can keep the standard. I'm afraid. Therefore, I'm approaching your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. So this verse is not negative. It's not just a lust-bashing verse that makes us, you know, shake and feel bad and just want, oh boy, here comes another one of those verses. Maharaj is really going to get into it. You know, and yeah, I know it's all true, but, how many lectures have I heard like this? Come on. Went to the temple 5 times last year, and 2 out of those 5 times I heard one of these verses. This is too much. No. Rupa Goswami is showing you what the solution is. It's a personal solution. Oh, my Lord, Yadupati, engage me in your personal service. A Vaishnava takes everything personally. My situation that I'm in is due to personal reasons. It can be solved by personal reasons. It can be solved by taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada immediately points out, What are you doing when you chant Hare Krishna? You're saying, Hare, O energy of the Lord. O my Lord Krishna. This is a personal cry. O my Lord Krishna. When you chant like that, then you'll attract Krishna's attention. Therefore, as we always point out, it's necessary to monitor the quality of our japa as an indication of our personalism, our personal feelings. When the conditioned soul attains his real spiritual energy and fully surrenders unto the Lord's lotus feet, he tries to engage in the Lord's service. This is the real constitutional position of a living entity. A devotee's life is a battle to engage in service. Accept that and things will come in focus in your life. What you're really battling with is, I have to engage in service. There are forces pushing against me. Lust, anger. I was minimized. I was misunderstood. You get angry. Who are these devotees to dare underestimate me, to dare look down upon me, to dare criticize me? I'll accept criticism if it's right, but I just have to tell you, and my friends agree, most of the time it's been wrong. It was just too much. I mean, there was some point to it, but it was just too much. All my friends agree. My wife also agrees. It was just too much. We want to fight that battle to remain engaged in Krishna's service. Yes, we have our material needs, and the style of our life will vary from ashram to ashram. Nevertheless, there's one thing that overrides all the ashram differences. That is the battle to hear the holy name and the battle to engage in Krishna's service. That's going to always be there. It's a wonderful struggle. I've always given this example. Wouldn't you like it if someone was struggling to please you? You'd feel very good about that. If someone, I know their inconveniences, I know that some days my mind is just here and there, but I'm just doing this day after day for you. How would you feel? Yeah, this is what life's all about. Yeah, very good. That's all Krishna wants from us. Declare your life as a battle for engaging in devotional service, and everything starts to become clear. No matter what your material obligations are, and certainly those are there, without a doubt. We can't deny that there certainly are material obligations. Even in the renounced order of life, there are material obligations. That's the nature of this world. But if we look at our life and see, this is a battle for engaging in Krishna's service. Or, if you're not so inclined to military examples, Vrijan Prabhu, he always points it out to me. So, upon his inspiration, I try to come up with like agricultural examples. Growing things, you know. Flowers growing, you know, crops growing. But, you know, the battlefield examples, they don't turn everyone on. So, look at your life as an opportunity for growing the devotional creeper in spite of bad weather conditions. This is the influence of a sadhu. As soon as he walks in the room, he says, I changed my whole... A plant, when it grows, it has to tolerate good weather. The plant has to tolerate scorching heat, freezing cold, hail, but still, the plant battles to grow. I mean, still... Still the plant tries to grow. So I remember, I always like to give this example. I was at a home program in Perth. Someone had, a devotee, they had just bought a home and they were having, what do you call them, these, yes, where, you know, you consecrate the home. So they invited myself and Boris and Prabhu, and I was really trying to figure out what to say, you know. And so then Boris and Prabhu told me, you know, a very good angle, which I've never forgotten. When talking to householders, here's a good approach. Say, be as happy as you can be in a world where there's no happiness. It's work everywhere. Only one place. Someone looked at me and said, "Oh, thanks, Maharaj." That was Brazil, which is like, you know, carnival, sensual atmosphere. The only place in the world. Everywhere else, everyone, they look at you very thoughtful. They start thinking, be as happy as you can be in a world where there's no happiness. So that way you cover both sides, you know. Because naturally everyone wants to be happy, you know. Not simply householders, sannyasis want to be happy too. Oh, I got a nice seat on the airplane with plenty of leg room. No movie screens in front of my eyes. No female executive sitting next to me yapping away. Yes. Everyone wants, you know, to feel happy and satisfied. So that is a natural propensity of a living entity. It's just there's a problem with this place we're in, that's all. There's a problem with the material world. Rupa Goswami here is quoting this verse, Nectar Devotion. There's no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. That we have to get through our heads. No limit. Yet, in the spiritual world, there are unlimited arrangements for loving affairs. That is why Yadupati comes to this world to demonstrate his pastimes. To show you, this is what you want. You don't want the unlimited taskmaster of material desires. You want the unlimited arrangements for love. So, Krishna comes, Swayam Bhagavan, he demonstrates his leela in Dwarka. He demonstrates his leela in Vrindavan. He marries 16,000 wives. He has his rasa leela, just to show you that nothing compares to my personal arrangements for my devotee's happiness. Nothing compares to that. He shows things that are not even seen in Vaikuntha when he comes to this world. He shows things that are amazing even for Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. So it is to that Yadupati that this prayer is addressing. I come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Service saves us. That is the core of our life. Service saves us. Yes, it is not easy navigating your way through this world, but if you keep this core desire somehow or other, service saves me. Yadupati's personal service saves me. Then somehow or other you can stay afloat, especially in good association that's stimulating us in that way. You can think of what it was like after the departure of the Yadu dynasty. Uddhava was discussing this with Vidura. Krishna Jyumani Nimloche, the sun of the world has set. The Krishna sun has set. And the whole world is plunged into darkness. The house of the Yadu dynasty has now been swallowed up by time. Very beautiful example, because when the sun sets, it doesn't mean the end of the sun. It means the sun is visible somewhere else. Yet, Uddhava is magnifying this emotional feeling of what it's like when the sun sets in terms of the Krishna sun setting. How unfortunate are we who had Krishna in our midst? The Yadu dynasty, most of them did not think Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. They accepted the Lord as the super soul. Uddhava knew. So he's commenting, how unfortunate are the Yadu dynasty? They had Swayam Bhagavan in their midst. They didn't realize it. Then he lamented for himself. Why would he include himself when he knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original? Because it is the nature of devotional service, when properly executed, that you always feel, I'm not serving Krishna enough. So that's what Uddhava felt. Mundane psychologists can't understand these devotional ecstasies of feeling inadequate. Mm-hmm. It's part of viraha bhava, feeling separation and the inadequacies, that I didn't take advantage of Krishna's presence. So many of Prabhupada's disciples can feel that way. If only I had done this, if only I had done that. I remember in Atlanta, Prabhupada was taking questions, which wasn't usual. By that time, 75, he would not take heaps of questions after his lecture. But this time in Atlanta, he just held forth any questions, and it was obvious. It was open season. Everyone was raising their hand. My godbrother Narantara Prabhu asked Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? Expecting a book distribution ki jai answer. And Prabhupada just said, if you love Krishna. So everyone was raising their hand, and I had a burning question I wanted to ask. It was, why does Prabhupada write in the Bhagavatam that even the impersonalists, the gyanis, need a touch of bhakti in order to merge into the impersonal Brahman? So, but I was feeling shy, and then finally I started to put my hand up. And then Prabhupada said, thank you very much, and ended there. He didn't see. So I was, ever since then I've always thought, why didn't I get my hand up quicker? So it's a part of the emotional situation of bhakti that the more Krishna conscious you become, the more inadequate you feel. And Uddhava, he's no ordinary devotee. He's Mantri Raj. He's the best of Krishna's counselors. Even Krishna takes a counselor, takes advice from qualified sources. Uddhava is described as being having the intelligence of Brihaspati, the chief priest, Brahmana, of the heavenly planets. So, he was feeling inadequate. I knew Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original. I could not take advantage enough. And the other Yadus, they didn't even know he's the original personality of Godhead. How unfortunate are we all? Therefore, when Rupa Goswami refers to Yadupati, it is very personal, heart-rendering. He wrote two plays, Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava, describing the flavors in Vrindavan and the flavors in Dwarka. The more you see the emotional realities going on in these shlokas, the more satisfied you'll be in Krishna consciousness. They're the realities of material life presented graphically. Kamarinam katina katsida palita durni desas. How many masters, how many desires they're inflicting upon me. No vacation. You can feel that. And then the act of taking shelter at the lotus feet of Yadupati. Meaning, engage me in your personal service. As you engage in Krishna's personal service and continue hearing about Krishna's glories, which is, of course, the essential part of devotional service, This temple is a Tirthakirti. It is a holy place where the glories of Krishna are presented. Krishna's glories are specially meant for Tirthas, holy places. They're good anywhere, anytime, but especially in a Tirtha. That is the advantage of participating in a devotional community. And certainly there are inconveniences sometimes being with devotees. Certainly there are misunderstandings. Certainly there are minimizations. Because this is a hospital and we're trying to become cured. So sometimes diseases flare up a little. Nevertheless, let us not forget the overriding nature of this place. It's a Tirtha, a holy place of pilgrimage, where hearing Krishna's glories becomes especially effective. Keep that topmost in your mind, and you'll be able to pass over all the inconveniences, which do crop up. We don't deny that. There are disappointments. There are personal letdowns. But when you keep the topmost purpose in mind, then the heart becomes enthralled. Krishna is also known as Amalakirti. His glories are spotless. So even though the material world is full of mullas, full of contamination, if in the ear, the Amalakirti, Krishna with spotless glories is always pouring into your ear, then your vision remains enlivened. That's a personal thing. The choice, I shall be enlivened approaching the lotus feet of Yarupati. So next time, we'll be discussing another verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita by Yamunacharya, in which he expresses the joy of having such a master. In this way, we can see how to expand our hearts in bhakti, because everyone likes that feeling when your heart's expanding, pumping. You like that. The Vaishnava Acharyas are experts in how to have an expanded heart. And we'll hear from Yamuna Acharya, who's going to tell you what it's like. Now you hear Rupa Goswami throwing off the unwanted masters of material existence and taking shelter of Yarupati. That gives strength to the heart. And then, as you apply yourself to the lotus feet of Yarupati, Krishna's pastimes become more and more manifest in your mind. When you hear about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty, the Lord did it for so many reasons. A main reason was the Yadu dynasty is a burden to the world, a burden of love. The Lord thought they would never be able to tolerate my disappearance. They won't live through the separation. It'll be too much for the earth. Better to take them out. But no material force can end the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, Krishna said, I myself will have to cause the disappearance. Any questions? Yes.
Lord Chaitanya gives protection when one is preaching, his protection, and how is it that sometimes we can become infected from
materialism? That's the way this world is. If you're going to operate in this world for service for Krishna, you have to understand the realities. Why is it sometimes you go out and you get cold? Why is it sometimes you go out and you get wet? But still you go, right? So the important thing, the first important thing is you go on with your service. A devotee told me, he said that to Prabhupada, that I was going on an errand for you, for your service, and on the way I was assaulted in my mind by this and that. And what did Prabhupada ask? Well, did you complete the errand? That is important. It's not just being, shall we say, practical, devoid of emotional understanding. No. By completing the service, your consciousness changes. So that was the first thing Prabhupada asked him. Well, did you complete the service? Because that shows some kind of emotional commitment, that even though I had to struggle a bit, I still did it. You see, this is another point I don't want to get into today, but somehow or other devotees have it in their hearts that Krishna is a cruel taskmaster. Not understanding, aloof. Here we are struggling with this bhakti, which is impossible. Here we are biting our teeth, doing the impossible of trying to control our material desires, and Krishna just stands back and asks us to serve him. I've spoken about this in quite a few places, and after a while it all comes out. Yeah, there's a bit of a grudge against Krishna. We can enjoy the material world, we all know that, but Krishna, you've made devotional service impossible. Sometimes devotees, they even just blurt it out. Well, look, if Krishna is God, we all accept that, why doesn't he just take us back to Godhead and just leave it at that, you know? I've had it happen to me so many times. Why does he can do it? Why do we have to struggle like this? Therefore, I like to point out a simple example. I've said it again. If somebody would struggle for you, you'd appreciate it so much. Your heart would be touched. Of course, we don't have the capacity to reward anyone properly, but Krishna does. We should not underestimate trying to do something for Krishna to the best of our ability. Certainly Krishna is watching our struggles. And we'll talk more about that another time. Anything else? Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada.